My name is Jung Hoon Oh from Aalto University, Finland. Right now, I'm a postdoc researcher in that lab. And then the first author of this paper couldn't make it today because of some visa problems. He couldn't get the visa here, so that's why I'm presenting the work here. Today, I'm going to talk about this service adaptation middleware for the DTN based on this very simple HTTP, simple queue service. And this is a joint work with Haraway and Bojum from Royal Institute of Technology from Sweden. So the background, I mean, it is actually a general background for this DTN, where DTN is used. I mean, probably maybe in more civilized or more developed countries, the DTN doesn't have so much or so wide usage, but in the developing countries or even somehow in China, in some western provinces of China, the infrastructure is not so good either. So probably you could get some sort of cellular network infrastructure, but the internet access is still very weak there. So people couldn't get internet access. So the only way they can do the internet server is by mobile phone. So this is also a place where the DTN data torrent network can play a role there in these kind of places. I will give a very brief introduction of what DTN is, just in case some of you are not so familiar with, but I suppose you, maybe most of you are very familiar with this kind of concept. So DTN is kind of is standardized by the IETF working group, and it is standardized by this RFC 5050, and it is actually a bond layer which is sitting between the transport layer and application layer. So it's kind of bridge from the transport layer and application layer, which facilitates the application development from the user's perspective. And then the core idea of this DTN is kind of store and forward. So if there is connection available, then the DTN daemon will do the transmission of the data or the packets. But if not, if the connection is not available, then the DTN daemon or the node which is DTN enabled will just store the packets or the messages locally, and trying to find a good time to do the transmission. So currently there are various open source implementations of DTN, and two very widely used DTN implementations is DTN2 and this Bytewalla. So this DTN2 is sort of for the Linux, kind of normal Linux and workstations, MacBooks and stuff like that. And then there is another DTN implementation which names Bytewalla, which is a ported or specialized version of this DTN2, which is ported by some master students from KTH to the Android phones. So right now you can use these DTN services by using the Android mobile phones. And then the motivation of our work is kind of, because you could see a lot of applications or a lot of services which are DTN enabled, but I mean they are building on top of different platforms or different operating systems, and also people use different methods or mechanisms to use these kind of services. So our work is to make this kind of usage easier by developing and designing and implementing some sort of unified middleware sitting between the application or application developers and the underlying DTN network. So that's our motivation and contribution. So this is a more implementation-oriented work, not that much research-oriented. But anyhow, we are willing to share these ideas and the results with the whole research community. So as a sentence to conclude, so we build some sort of middleware to enable the DTN application development. And what we use for the demo, for the implementation, we use different hardwares. I mean, the reason why we use different hardwares is kind of that because nowadays people are facing different. For instance, people are using MacBooks and workstations or servers, and there are also people who are using very constrained devices like sunspots and some of sensors and very lightweight devices as well. So different devices, they have different requirements of the hardware and also for the implementations. So that's why we want to demo various or diversified hardware of this DTM implementation. So we used this Alex board computer, which is kind of lightweight if you compare it with the workstations or the laptops. But still, it is very powerful to host the kind of normal Linux distributions like Voyage Linux and the Bifrost Linux. And then we also use the Sunspot. Sunspot is kind of, if you compare it with the sensors, it is powerful. But if you compare it to the Alex board or some sort of workstations, it is not so powerful. But still, it is powerful to support different sensors. You can use the sensors to sense, for instance, the temperature, the humidity, and the light level. So we use the sunspots to connect different light levels and temperature and better readings from the sensors. And then this sunspot, it utilizes very lightweight operating system, which is Squawk. I'm not sure if you have ever heard about this Squawk operating system or not, but it is a very lightweight Java virtual machine. And it can support multiple applications running concurrently. So in that sense, Sunspot is a very powerful device, and you can use it to do a lot of things in the embedded world. And for the software, we use two different DTM service daemons. The first one is DTM2, is kind of a normal Linux distribution, which is deployed on the Linux boards, and we also use this Batwalla to deploy it on the Android phones to act as this the message carrier from one network to another one. Because I mean, the core idea of this DTN network DTN is kind of you can store the messages or the packets in one network, and you can also use some sort of a fixed carrier to carry this message and move it to some other part of the network, and then kind of opportunistic network. And then we also use this HTTP simple queue service. The reason why we choose this HTTP simple queue service is because it's simplicity. It's very simple to use and very, very lightweight. It has just around 800 lines of code, and it is very easy for second time development. So here is the architecture of the work. Actually, there are three components of this middleware. The first one is this client API. Actually, we have developed four different client APIs, and for the Java, PHP, and Python, and also the C++ API. And then under this client API, there is this HTTP simple queue service, HTTP SQS, and then even under this HTTP simple queue service, there is HTTP SQS message processor. So this message processor is used to processing the message, because the HTTP SQS is just a queue. So you still need some other components to process the queue, I mean the messages from this queue, to put it in the queue and then take it from the queue and process it. So this is what this HTTP SQS message processor does. And I will give a little bit more detailed information about the HTTP SQS message processor in the following slides. So we also implemented two different messages types. And the first one is the text, and the second one is XML message. The text message is kind of very simple and very straightforward. So it's very, very easy. But the weakness of this text message is not so extensible. And you can do a certain amount of work, but then beyond that, you couldn't do much. But for this XML message, then you can do a lot more. But then the weakness of this XML message is it is it requires more resource, and also it consumes much, much more energy or power. So you need to make some trade-off between these two different messages. So here is the some detailed information about the HTTP SQS message processor. There are two different functions of this this processor. So the first one is to do the serialize and deserialize of the messages. So the serialize means if the message should be taken from the local representation to external representation, then this is this serialize does. And if you want to do the other way around, then it is this deserialize. So if you want to do some representation from the external world to the local world, then you need to do this deserialize. And the second function of this processor is the request and reply processor. So we implemented four different queues. So the first two is request and reply. They are kind of normal queues. So if you send a request, they are stored in the request view, request queue. And the results of this request, they are stored in the reply queue. And if the requests, they are not transmitted successfully, so the requests, they will be put in the retry queue to provide a reliable storage of the messages. And if you have tried a certain number of times and then afterwards it still can be delivered, then the message will be put in the data queue. And this thing, in that sense, it means it needs manual interruption from the human beings. So this is basically the HTTP SQS message processors does. And we have implemented two example applications to demo to show. So this works. And then what is the performance of this kind of middleware? So the first one is DHN2, network management tool, which we name as DNMT. So this management tool provides a user-friendly DTM network management tool. So this is kind of at least more friendly to the end users than the native DTN applications or interfaces. So it provides a web user interface. You can define the options which you want to do with the DTN network. For instance, to get the statistics of the messages and get a detailed information of the messages. And also you can dump or add or delete the route. And then you can also add or delete the links by using the management tools. So this is kind of for the end users, make their life easier. And then how it works is kind of you will send this send a request to this DTM service adaptation middleware, and then this Python management tool will take the messages from this middleware and then process it. And then the way it communicates with the DTN2 daemon is by using this telnet. So that is the first application. And the second one is called environmental monitoring application, which we actually will monitor the kind of the humidity and the light level and the temperature of the environment by using the sensors which are attached to the sunspot. So we have four different clients. The first one is the PHP web client. So this is very similar to the web interface which we presented a bit moment ago. And then we have the Java client, which is running on the sunspot, which is used to connect the data and then broadcast the data. And a third client is running on the DTN gateway, which is used to set up and tear down the connections with the sunspot. So it is acting as some sort of a DTN gateway and used to connect and redeliver or redistribute the messages to different parts of the network. And then the last one is a C++ DTN2 service client, which is used to send and receive the messages and also to do the batch downloading or kind of batch transferring of the messages and packets. So here is the evaluation network setup. We have two different networks, which is kind of artifacts. I mean, we used two different offices to do this evaluation. So one office is deployed with this village network, and the other office is kind of acting as the city network. So we have two Alex bots here acting as the DTN router, and another one acting as this village gateway. And we have a bunch of laptops, which is acting as the client to send the messages. And also we use around 10 source bots to connect the information from the environment, like temperature and humidity stuff there. And then we use some cable between this router and the gateway, and then the communication between the sunspots and the base station is 802.15.4. And then after we get the information from this village network, we use the mobile phone to carry the messages and then move it to the other room, and then to send the message to the city gateway, kind of emulated network. So here is some very preliminary evaluation results. So we measured the throughput from these two parts, from this DDN2 client to this village gateway, because we think that the bottleneck of this network is definitely this part, we mean the mobile phone part. So we just wanted to see how much traffic you can send between this part, because because this part actually depends on the the bandwidth of the cellular network. So we couldn't do much with that. So we tried to send 1 gigabyte file, and then we divided this 1 gigabyte file into different file sizes, ranging from 1 to 10 to 100 megabytes. And then eventually we found out this 20 megabytes file size is the optimal one, because you can achieve the maximum throughput around 6.65 megabytes per second. And then we measured the energy consumption of this laptop, which is sending the packets. We use this WhatsApp meter to record the power consumption of this laptop. And then we eventually find out no matter what kind of size is you choose, then the kind of the power consumption, the power of the laptop is around the same, is around 4.5 watts. So then the total complete energy consumption of the laptop is depending on the throughput. So if you can achieve better or higher throughput, then you can save energy. That's the basic trick. And we also evaluated this DSA DSM put and get HTTP SQS message. And we also measured the throughput and also the energy consumption. Here, we also observed the same principles, like no matter what you change the message size, the power of the laptop is around the same, is around 4.5 or 4.6 watts. So the throughput and the eventual energy consumption of the laptop is depending on the throughput. Then we found out with this HTTP SQS put and get messages, then the optimal size of the messages is around 256 bytes. So if you increase the size even more, then the throughput of the request, they are decreasing very significantly, and then the benefit you can achieve from the increase in the message size is kind of sacrificed by the throughput. So the optimal situation for sending and receiving the messages is kind of 256 bytes. We digged a bit into this kind of what is the kind of the reason behind this scenario. We suspect it. We suspect the reason is kind of the bundling layer, because you have to add add some sort of overhead or kind of header before the actual payload of the messages. And this kind of header will have some impact on the complete transmission of the packets. Basically, it means if the message size is bigger, or if the payload is bigger, then you will achieve much less overhead. But then the throughput is kind of decreased by increasing the message size. Then actually we couldn't figure out what is the real or exact reason why this 256 bytes is the optimum size. So the conclusion of this paper is kind of the evaluation is not so important, because the core idea of this paper is that we want to demonstrate we have used different client APIs, and we use this unified middleware to support different APIs, and then we can use this very simple head lightweight HTTP SQS messaging services to support this kind of DTM services, kind of unified and simplified way. So the conclusion of this paper is kind of we provide a communication layer between DTM service demos and different applications, and then we also demoed two applications to show it is feasible, it is doable, and we made it. And then also we also provided an environmental monitoring solution for developing regions. So eventually you can use these sunspots and the sensors attached to the sunspots to connect different information from the environment. And then based on this kind of raw data, you can do some sort of value-added service, even though I have no idea what this kind of value-added service could be, but probably you could figure out how can you manage this kind of raw data. All right, so that concludes my talk today. Questions? Mm-hmm. Did you look at all in any of your experiments? What happened? Did you lose some? Loses somewhat in the we did some sort of very basic research regarding your question. And previously we planned to deploy the middleware and the DTN gateway, and also the message collection into different components. So if some parts of this gateway is failed, then you can still recover from this kind of failure. But eventually, then we are sort of this annex bot in our lab. That is why we integrate these three components into this single part. Actually, this it would be better if you could distribute this components or functionality into different systems. So this will make it more robust and easier to recover. Yeah. Good question, but. We did some sort of prototype, but actually we don't know. I mean, we couldn't figure out what is exactly we can use this kind of, for instance, the sunspots data. I mean, then used in a very useful way, because I mean the kind of the sensor data you can get from the sensors they are very kind of generic. So you can do whatever you want, but at the other hand, I mean, you couldn't do very kind of innovative way, or you couldn't make it make very fancy stuff. So, if you have a better idea of this deployment, then you're welcome to propose some. Right. So, probably. I mean, right now the answer is no. Actually, we don't have a very very detailed plan to deploy it in real life. But then eventually we're thinking about if we could extend this kind of scenario in our lab and then try to integrate some other sensors into this world or into this picture, probably we could do something more. But honestly speaking, I don't know how to integrate this kind of scenario there. Right.
Yeah. Final talk of the workshop is we've seen a lot in this space of how web access is different in developing countries. And the final talk in this workshop is going to be how to apply various acceleration techniques to those workloads to see which ones give us the most traction.